You've written your own directions and whistled the rules of change. By Kuketsu Kirui. Away team. Prompt. Skin deep. Fandom. Stargate Atlantis, pairing John Rodney, and it's rated NC-17. The summer after fourth grade can be pretty much summed up by two things. Star Wars and Aunt Trisha's wedding. There's also the usual month at the house in Tahoe, and there's camp and swimming and other summer stuff. But there was Star Wars at the beginning, and now the wedding at the end, and it seems like everything in between was just filler. Trisha is John's youngest aunt, younger than some of his cousins even. She's the one who taught John to skateboard, and who took him and Davy to see Star Wars 3 times. She lets him read her comic books, all the Supermans, Batmans, and Fantastic Fours, and a dozen other titles she's been collecting since she was younger than John. She plays Monopoly with him, and bought him ABBA's Arrival album for his 10th birthday, and can make just about anything out of Legos. When John was little, he used to say he wanted to be her when he grew up. He used to sneak clothes from the back of Mom's closet, stuff she never wore anymore. This was way back when Davy still looked up to him, when he'd do anything John said. Now he looks at John like Dad does, and John knows he's remembering the way John would wobble across the room in Mom's high heels, or spin in front of the mirror to make the dress flare out. Now there's a lock on Mom's closet, and John knows he won't grow up to be Trisha. He smiles and tells her congratulations and hopes nobody notices how much he touches the slippery, smooth material of her dress when he hugs her. His tie feels like it's choking him. Meredith peeks out the back door. Mommy, she calls, I'm gonna have a snack. Mom looks up from her gardening, her floppy hat covering her eyes. Okay, sweetie, but don't spoil your dinner. Humming to herself, Meredith opens the fridge. She pushes cheese and lettuce and a bowl of grapes out of the way, but all that's behind them is a carton of eggs. She eats a handful of the grapes and finds the hot dogs on the next shelf, behind the milk. She takes out 2 hot dogs, takes a bite of one, and then sets them on the counter as the refrigerator door swings shut behind her. She unbuttons her corduroys and pushes them down to her knees. She takes one of the hot dogs, the one she hadn't taken a bite of, and slips it inside her panties. It feels lumpy and not quite right, but it feels righter than it did before. Allison is smart, pretty, fun to hang out with, and probably deserves a better boyfriend than John. She has a lock on her door to keep out her little sister, and her parents are never home, but John's still nervous when they make out on her bed after school. Her breasts are smallish and the perfect size for John's hands. She takes off her shirt, pulling it over her head, half-buttoned. Her bra is white and lacy, and John says, "Let me," when she reaches back to undo it. He wants to keep touching her like this forever, memorizing how right her body is. He touches her and thinks about how cool it would be if they suddenly switched, like Freaky Friday or something. Or maybe he could just magically become Jodie Foster. That would be cool, too. It's almost enough to distract him from her hand on his crotch. Enough at least to get him in that place where he's sort of outside his body, and then it's okay that she's touching him because it's not him. It's just this weird pod person where Jodie Foster is supposed to be. When she goes downstairs later to get a couple of Cokes, he doesn't mean to look through her dresser drawers, and once he's got the underwear drawer open, he tells himself he'll just look, or maybe touch a little, but the next thing he knows, he's stuffed a pink lacy bra down at the bottom of his backpack. By then, he can hear Allison coming up the stairs, singing Rio off-key, and it's too late to put it back even if he wanted to. He puts it on that night after he's supposed to be in bed. The bands dig into his skin a little, even on the last hook, but it'll have to do. He stuffs the cups with Kleenex, and when he puts his t-shirt back on over it, it almost looks real. He keeps it on when he jerks off. With his eyes shut, he can pretend it's someone else's dick in her hand. Coming home to find Taylor meditating is not necessarily a bad sign. Taylor meditates a lot. She can't help it. Her parents were hippies. It's the puffy red eyes, the way she sounds so resigned when she says, "Mare, we need to talk." That's when Meredith notices the duffel bag on the couch. I know about Mark, and I know he's not the first. It shouldn't hurt, because Meredith's the one who's fucked up. It shouldn't hurt like this, but it's not that she wanted this to happen. She was going to meet Taylor's parents. They were going to make a road trip of it, enjoy their last summer of being students. "I'm not going to be your little experiment," Taylor takes a deep breath. "I can't do this and sit around until you finally admit that you're straight." "That's not it." "Then what is it?" Taylor pleads, Meredith looks away. Just tell me and I don't know, Meredith says miserably. She doesn't even like men. I don't know. Nancy always says she chose her name as a sort of fuck you to everyone who called her Nancy Boy growing up. Maybe that's why she's the first girlfriend Jody's had in nearly 15 years. Or the first girlfriend she's had ever, depending on how you count these things. Jody's fuck you is the Christmas card she sends after they move in together. One of those photo postcards, so that even if Mom throws it away, she'll have to live with the horrible shame of the mailman knowing she has a lesbian daughter. After Jody's dropped it in the mail, along with the one to Dave, addressed to Mr. and Mrs. David Shepherd, in case he's traded in the old wife and got a new model again. She wishes she had thought to add, formerly known as John, to the signature, just so that the mailman gets the full effect. She gets the call a few weeks later, 2 days before her 13th birthday. The first two messages on the machine are for Nancy, and Jody's sorting through the mail, only half paying attention, when suddenly there's Dad saying, John, and I received your card, and your mother lost her battle with cancer on the 17th. There's a long pause after that, and then, I hope you're happy, just before he hangs up. The machine moves on to the next message, but she just crawls into bed, still fully dressed, and pulls the covers over her head. It's not the fact that the funeral must have already happened, or that she didn't even know her mom was battling in the first place. It's that she was supposed to be better than them. She's still curled up, tense and headachy, and unable to cry when Nancy gets home. It's meeting Gretchen at Pride, or rather sleeping with her that night, that makes it click. She is the girl Rodney's always wanted, with the cock he's always wanted to have. He starts seeking out T-girls after that. Sometimes he feels skeevy about it. He'll surf X-Tube or one of those sites with the shemale or ladyboy in the name. It'll get him hard like nothing else. He'll watch a video of a girl stroking her hard cock, and his boxers will be soaking wet even before he touches himself. The thing is he's not just attracted to men. He's attracted to women. And he's dated a lot of women with cunts. But no matter how much he is in love, it always ends up with him wanting cock. It always ends up with him hurting people. Craigslist is the last place Jody expects to meet someone. Well, anyone decent, anyway. A look through the ads for T-girls turns up mostly trolls and guys with shemale fetishes. But Nancy badgers her into placing an ad, just as she's badgered her into signing up for OKCupid and Adult Friend Finder, both of which resulted in a couple of okay-sounding guys among the creeps, but none of them had gone anywhere beyond the first date. True, she hadn't had much better luck the old-fashioned way, either. She and Nancy lasted for a little over 2 years before Nancy finally said, I love you, Jody, but if I wanted someone this emotionally unavailable, I'd be straight. Then there was Ronan, who was not only the best fuck Jody'd ever had, hands down, but also drop-dead gorgeous and tall enough to make her feel feminine. He didn't think a football game or an afternoon at the shooting range was a weird date, either. Unfortunately, he was also a grad student at Berkeley, and had moved to Hawaii after graduation. They still kept in touch, but neither of them wanted a long-distance relationship. And the less said of clubs, the better. She had had more than enough of that scene, when she was still pretending to be a guy, so Craigslist it is. She's not sure what the ad will actually attract anyone. She plays down the fact that she really, really wants to get laid, troll bait for sure, with a vague statement about how possibly looking for something long-term. She focuses more on her likes, dislikes, and looks, which, if she's honest with herself, kind of scream tranny. She gets half a dozen responses the first day. Creep, creep, spammer, can't spell to save his life, creep, and for variety, another creep. There are more after that, all of which continue to live down to expectations. There's one on the third day who sounds okay, a guy around her age who teaches culinary arts at City College. The attached photo isn't what she would have sent. He looks a little like a squirrel, frankly, but at least he's honest, unlike the guy who expected her to believe he was David Beckham, or the one who sent photos of two completely different porn stars. Besides, she's more than a little curious to see if he's as wonderful as he claims, or as obnoxious as the five paragraphs of, "My awesome, let me show you it," accompanied by a random tangent into why Batman is better than every other superhero ever, suggest. She's not ruling out the possibility of both. Rodney's main criteria when browsing personals is intelligence, or at least the appearance thereof. Correct spelling and grammar, that sort of thing. As it happens, this narrows down the field considerably. So when he found a non-op girl who was not only literate but also geeky, he may have gotten a little bit overboard trying to impress her. He can't help it if smart chicks who love sci-fi comics give him a hard-on. She's hot, too, if the pictures she sent are anything to go by. Not beautiful, but handsome and athletic. She did mention liking football, the freak. And very, very pretty when she smiles. He tries to tone it down a little on their date. The patented Rodney McKay charm can be lethal in large doses. And the more time he spends with Jody, the more he actually, well, wants to spend more time with her. If she knew him, she'd realize what a huge compliment that is. He also wants to bang her 6 ways to Sunday, also take as a compliment. But he's smart enough to keep that to himself. Whatever he does say over dinner works, because she invites him back to her place. The main things that stand out from the half-remembered nervous babble are rants about evil of citrus, how well Russell T. Davies is ruining Doctor Who. But if that's what turns her on, who is he to argue? So, she says, kicking off her shoes once they're in the door. Just so we're on the same page here. I'm pretty comfortable with my dick now. There was a time when all I wanted to do was lop the damn thing off. Rodney winces and Jody laughs nervously, tucking her hair behind the ears. I know, TMI, sorry. Anyway, it's... She takes a deep breath, and the rest all comes out in a rush. It doesn't seem like a big deal now that I have everything else, you know... Well, I guess you don't, but I wanted to get that out of the way, prevent awkwardness and all. This is where he should tell her, but instead he just says, I hear the best way to prevent awkwardness is with more awkwardness. She laughs then, genuinely this time. So now that I've gone and ruined the mood. There was a mood? He stepped closer, rests his hands on her hips. She's a little taller than him, but not by much. She tilts her head, one corner of her mouth twitching up. I thought there was. I still want to have sex with you, he says, and kisses her. Like a lot. Well then, she pulls back and jerks her head toward the open bedroom door. He'd like to undress her slowly to spread her out in the bed and just look at her forever. But she's already unbuttoning her blouse, letting it fall from her shoulders. He unbuttons his own and toes out of his shoes, and by the time he's down to just his knees, jeans, she's already naked. Her tits are perfect, her small nipples hard and ready. Her dick's mostly soft. But she's still definitely a shower, long and thick, and Rodney wants it so much it hurts. He pushes her back on the bed and reaches down, jerks her off as they kiss. Her dick feels so right in his hand. What do you wanna? She moans and arches up. There's lubes and condom in the drawer. God, I'd love to fuck you. Now it's his term for the nervous laugh. I'd love to fuck you, but I'm not packing hard. She freezes for a moment, finally meets his eyes. Sorry, I know I should have said. She kisses him quiet, reaches down and undoes the button to his fly. Next time. Next? Oh. Oh. He gasps as she wriggles her hand in, pushes aside his packer. Yeah. Yes, next time. Next time is good. I can fuck you, she says, if you... Yes. Want. Yes, he grins, I want. The end. Thank you for listening to this story. You can leave feedback for the author at kyuuketsukiriui@livejournal.com. Thanks for listening.